Hello and welcome to Off the Shelf Reviews.
I'm wearing my hair down today and I don't care.
And I'm Gary. And today we're going to review and discuss Once Upon a Time in the West, released in 1968 from writers Sergio Donati, Dario Argento, Sergio Leone, and Bernardo Bertolucci. Ian, why don't you give us the synopsis?
Well, the story follows Harmonica, played by Charles Bronson, who's just turned up in a small town seeking revenge on Frank, played by Henry Fonda. Frank and his gang have just killed the McBaines at a small farm ranch so that they can steal the land, but they haven't taken into account Jill McBain, played by Claudia Cardinale. He also hasn't taken into account Cheyenne, the leader of the gang, played by Jason Robards, who's a little bit upset that Frank has used his gang to kill this family. As the four of them get together, we wonder which one of them will draw first and fall dead.
So this Sergio Leone movie came out after his, well, pretty much acclaimed spaghetti western trilogy with Clint Eastwood.
Yeah.
And he was pretty much done and dusted with this genre. He didn't want to make any more westerns.
Yeah, yeah.
And he wanted to go to America and make some more movies. But then Paramount Studios turned around and went, how about before you get to make Once Upon a Time in America, which I know you want to make, make another western. And we'll give you this massive budget to do it.
Yeah, so yeah, yeah.
He went away and wrote the script with everybody else. He studied other westerns. And,
yeah.
And then he was like, okay, I'll get Clint Eastwood back. And Clint was like, no, I'm done doing that.
Yeah, I'm done. Yeah.
So he was like, okay, well, I also want to get hold of Henry Fonda to play the villain.
Yeah.
And Henry Fonda went, no, I'm not doing that either.
I'm a good guy.
Exactly.
I'm not a villain.
So Sergio Leone apparently got on a plane and flew all the way over to the States to meet with Henry and go, look, this is the role. This is what I want you for.
Yeah.
And of course he signed on, and then apparently Fonda flew over to Italy, got some contact lenses put in, grew out a beard, and when he turned up on set, Sergio was like, no, out with the contacts, off with that. We want this big reveal, which comes early on in the movie, where you just mentioned in the synopsis that there's a massacre at the farm, and the big reveal that Henry Fonda, who's known as a good guy, was this butcher, this really cold-hearted killer.
Kid killer.
Exactly. So I was like, and all of that, I mean, just where do you even begin with this movie?
Oh,
you know, it's gone down as one of the greatest westerns of all time. And it was also one of those movies that was shown in film, in media classes, as an introduction to this genre as well. And this film has always stayed with me. I've always revisited it every 10 years or so.
Yeah.
And I'm still, like, still spellbound by the mastery at work in this film. It really is.
Yeah. I mean, as I've gotten older, I've really started to really appreciate westerns. Like, when I was young, I never got them. They were old movies, you know, and I kind of understand people's views of, oh, I don't want to go too far back in history and watch black and white movies or things like that, because I used to be like that. You know, I wanted to just watch sci-fis and horrors and people get cut up and all that kind of stuff. But at some point, I needed to get out of those genres. I was kind of bored, you know, movies at that caliber kind of dissolved and not being very good. And so I started to watch westerns, you know, A Fistful of Dynamite, A Fistful of Dollars, you know, The Magnificent Seven, you know, Once Upon a Time in the West, The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. And then as I got older and older, I started to really go and watch, you know, stranger ones like Support Your Local Sheriff and 3:10 to Yuma as well, the original.
Yeah, I agree. For me, it was films like Unforgiven and Tombstone that were my gateways into the genre.
Yeah, yeah.
And then once you've seen those, you're like, okay, how did we get here?
Yeah.
And you go back and then you realize that, you know, maybe Unforgiven is one of the best, but there were some bests before that too.
Yeah, I know. Like I said, going back to even the classic black and whites where you're seeing those stuntmen fall off
High
the real horses and things like that. Like, there is a skill in westerns, classic westerns, that you don't really see anymore because health and safety, for one. You know, special effects are easier to do. But Sergio Leone is that name. Whenever you think of westerns, Sergio Leone is the first name that pops up. And it always does make me laugh. The first one he did with Clint, A Fistful of Dollars, well, that's just a remake of Yojimbo, which he kind of got sued for.
Oh.
You know, Magnificent Seven is just a remake of Seven Samurai. So when I first watched The Good, the Bad and the Ugly, it was so original. It was so new. There was no story like it. And there was these beautiful vistas, this open land, these great wide shots. The first time I ever watched Once Upon a Time in the West, I gotta admit, I was naive. I thought it was slow. I thought it was boring. There just wasn't enough action. Not like The Good, Bad and the Ugly. That's got bridges blowing up and people being hanged and big shootouts. But watching this for the review, this has got, you know, such a core story of four people. You know, they're just the main stars. There are hundreds of actors in this movie, but that's just four core.
It's Jill McBain who is actually the star of the movie and the lead character. And it was something that Sergio Leone was also a bit hesitant about, because this is the only movie where he has a woman as the main star, the main actor.
Yeah, yeah.
And he was very hesitant about it, but one of the other writers was like, no, do it this way. It's going to be different. It'll be unique that way as well. Yeah. And of course, we don't actually get introduced to Jill until about 15, 20 minutes into the film.
Yeah.
Because we have one of the greatest cinematic intros to a movie of all time.
Oh, yeah.
This opening at this train station, where three guys just turn up in their duster jackets.
Yeah.
You know, they barely say a word, but they are menacing and intimidating.
Yeah.
And they bully this clerk into the back room.
Yeah.
They lock him in there, and then they just loiter and wait. And we wait with them for more than 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And there's no music here.
No,
now, originally, Ennio Morricone's score was actually, curiously, Ennio Morricone's score was written before the film was made. And usually the score is done after the film.
Yeah, yeah.
But he wanted to shoot the film and then edit the film to the music as well.
Yeah.
But the music he had wasn't working here. So he's like, I'm going to drop all the music. And I think it actually works to this film's benefit, because that sound effect of that creaking metal.
Yeah.
You know? And then the sound of that fly
the
buzzing.
The fly, yeah.
Of the the telegram machine clicking.
The water dripping on the guy's dripping. Hat.
It all builds that tension and that suspense, because we know these guys are up to no good, but what and why?
Yeah.
You know, and the way it builds, I mean, the way they smother jam over his face to get the fly there, you know, and then he traps it in the gun barrel and he's just listening to it. Like, these are clearly bad guys, but you're still interested in them. And so even though there's no dialogue, you're getting enthralled into this world, and then the train arrives.
Like, tell me another film that has a 10-minute intro before it even kicks off.
Right.
You know, I used to think that this opening was slow. I thought it was boring. I didn't know what the fuck I was talking about. I'm sat here, I'm sat watching it for the review. I'm in the mood. I mean, maybe it's I play too much Red Dead Redemption, but I'm sat there and I'm like, man, this is like a rock star opening. You know, the credits coming up. You know there's a train coming, but when is it coming? When are you going to start to hear that sound? And then when it finally turns up, the three guys are all prepared. They've got their guns ready. Whoever they're supposed to meet at this train, they're going to kill, or hoping to kill. And then Charles Bronson kind of just appears on the other side of the train, doesn't he?
As the train's leaving. Off, yeah.
And he's just there. And
harmonica in mouth, and you're hearing the music kick in at that point, and you're not actually aware that he's the one playing the harmonica, because you feel like it's the music score now just coming in, which it also is a massive part of the music score as well. Ennio Morricone's score in this is absolutely fantastic, and every character that gets out of them, all the main characters have their own themes, which develop and change throughout the movie, and they get super layered. And of course, some characters, their themes actually overlap as well, which signifies the characters kind of overlapping.
Yeah.
It's masterfully done here. And yeah, we know this dialogue, it just goes to show how much of a badass harmonica is.
Oh, yeah.
He shakes his head at first and he goes, no, you brought two horses too many.
Yeah.
And the shock on the other guy's face, like he's just been slapped, as he realizes this guy is...
See, I was a little slightly confused at this point, because they know he's coming. Frank has sent them here.
We don't know that yet, but
No, he says that, they say that. They're like, Frank has sent us. So I'm like, so whoever Frank is, he knew that this guy was turning up, or he wanted these guys waiting for whatever the stranger was who was going to step off. And it just so happens to be Harmonica. But then when they pulled the gun, I mean, I've seen enough westerns. They weren't pulling fast enough on this guy. And friggin' Charles Bronson goes blam, 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 and just takes them all out. But funnily enough, he gets injured and gets taken out. So for me, I'm like, man, it's like a beginning of a game. You know, like somebody's going to help him in a minute and they're going to heal him up. And then he's going to, nope. He just kind of gets up, checks his arm, and he disappears off.
Yeah.
And then we cut to this father out with his son. You know, they're hunting kind of quails, I think it is. And they grab the birds and they rush back to their farmhouse. Beautiful little farmhouse out in this little desert place. And their mum has died, I think, what, you know, 6 years, I think it was.
That's right, yeah.
6 years previously. And this dad is just raising his daughter, his oldest son and his youngest son all together on this farm. And he's telling his oldest son, you've got to go and you've got to meet this woman from the train station and bring her back here. We're going to have a party. You know, he's in charge. It's the Old West. He's the man of the house, you know, so he'll tell him everything. And his daughter's there, and he says to her, like, I'm just going to go get some fresh water. And he walks over, and there's a gunshot. And, like, I not felt this the first two times I watched this. But when he turns and you watch his daughter hit the floor, I'm like, oh, shit. Like,
Maureen,
there's not many Westerns that kill kids.
That's true.
You know, and then dad's shot.
Yeah.
The oldest son's shot. And the little kid comes running out. This little boy comes running out. And you watch that beautiful shot where all the guys and dusters kind of just start
emerge out of the bush.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Now, I also just want to say there was some awesome soundscape here as well. The foreshadowing of something ominous happening.
Oh, yeah, the crickets.
All the crickets just went silent.
Yes.
Just before the murders happened. And, yeah, this is what we were talking about earlier with the reveal of Henry Fonda stepping out as Frank.
Yeah.
Just standing there just, you know, after this massacre. And somebody goes, what are we going to do with him now, Frank? And he just pulls out his gun. He goes, well, now that you've used my name.
Yeah.
And he just grins. He just starts to smile as the gun is aimed at the kid. We hear the shot and we cut to the train.
Yeah.
It's like brutal.
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 And you then set up with Claudia Cardinale playing Jill McBain stepping off the train. And so she's the woman who was supposed to be picked up by the boy, you know.
It's really, really sad.
It is.
Even though her theme tune is beautiful, you've just witnessed her new family murdered.
Yeah.
And she's wandering around waiting for somebody to pick her up. She's looking around. And again, the cinematography here is outstanding. Oh, the set design is amazing. And she ends up wandering. And this is the overhead shot where it comes up over and reveals the whole Flagstone town.
Oh, yeah.
And
Armadillo. Fucking Armadillo.
Oh, right. And she eventually hires someone to take her out to Sweetwater.
Yeah.
Where her new home's going to be.
Yeah.
And we get the fun ride as the guy's galloping through.
Yeah.
Going super fast, and we get this again, these sweeping shots of these vistas before they eventually get to the farm.
Well,
and
they stop at that post first, don't they?
That's right.
They stop at this kind of watering hole so that they can pick up some supplies and stuff, and she walks in and she has the kind of meeting first with Harmonica, but then we get introduced to Cheyenne, played by Jason Robards, who's a classic actor. I remember him as the dad from Parenthood. You know, he's just that, you know, well, he's also in Philadelphia. He's just the older he got, the kind of more hardcore he got in his position.
He's my favorite character in this film, and his introduction is the best. I mean, the other ones have cool cinematic introductions, but his is a farce. It's a cartoon. When they're in there, because we don't see what's going on. All we hear is all these gunshots and people going, ugh, ugh. But it's like there's all these like, p-tong, p-tong, you know, ricochet gunshots, and we're cutting to people shaving, cleaning their legs, the old lady waking up from her sleep. You know, so it's cartoonish in its presentation compared to what we just witnessed.
Yeah.
And then when he does stumble in, or he walks in backwards.
Yeah.
And we're like, who is this man? What just went on outside? We don't know.
No.
But he seems like a dangerous person, the way that he holds the entire room's attention.
Yeah.
And we don't realize, it's again, expertly crafted, where when he raises the drink, we see the cuffs.
Yeah.
Like, he's an outlaw who's just broken free.
Yeah, yeah.
The way then that he goes up to Harmonica and he just holds everyone's attention, just like, can't trust this person. But the music, though, again, is very light and playful.
Yeah, yeah.
And that pretty much encapsulates who this character will be, is that, yeah, he's an outlaw, he's done some terrible things, but as the film goes on, we realise he's actually pretty much got a heart of gold.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, with the three characters, with Harmonica, Cheyenne, and Frank, it felt, again, like the good, the bad, and the ugly. Harmonica's the good, Cheyenne is the ugly, and Frank is the bad, but different to what the good, the bad, the ugly is, you know. They've all got their stories intertwined. And I liked in the notes where it was saying, like, we read that Sergio Leone had, like, said he didn't want to make any more westerns, but then they're like, oh yeah, yeah, come on, we'll give you the money and we'll give you Henry Fonda, so go off and have a think about it. And so he went off and he just sat there for a year watching classic westerns with Dario Argento and the director of friggin' Last Tango in Paris. I would have loved to have been a fly on the wall for that year while they just sat there going, that sequence is good, we should try to replicate that, and that sequence is great. I make fun of it, but I know that Sergio Leone, like, he was paying homage to these movies that he'd probably grown up with and he loved as well, so he wanted to play it back. So there are things in the movie where you go, oh, I've seen that before and I know where that's coming. But then with his twist on it, it feels really unique. And so then, yeah, Jill McBain, she leaves with the wagon guy and they head back to the McBain ranch. And that's when they come across this funeral procession. And you've got the family laid out on the table. And she's really upset, especially because the little boy has died. She, Claudia Cardinale's kind of acting made me think that she wanted to be a mum, yeah, and she'd not had the chance, but this was going to be her chance. She was going to try to help raise this child, this family. They were going to do some cool things or whatever.
And yeah. Well, we find out as well that she'd actually married McBain back in New Orleans.
Yeah.
A month ago.
A month before,
so
yeah.
So she came here to have a new life. And she was also told that McBain was a wealthy person. And of course, everyone else jokes that, you know, McBain causes this territory sweet water,
yeah,
but it's just sand and dirt,
yeah,
and a well,
yeah,
you know.
but
we'll find out later that McBain kind of knew that a railroad was going to come across his territory at some point.
Yeah, because we keep seeing that in the background.
That's right. Yeah, the film drops that at the beginning. Of course, we started a station as well.
Yeah,
and so we also then follow Jill in the house by herself, and she's going through all the drawers and the cupboards, and she's trying to find this wealth that apparently was there, and obviously she doesn't find it. And she is then almost determined or resolute in the fact that she's just going to go back to where she came from.
And, yeah, yeah. Her life, you know, she's left was pretty bad, but she can't imagine trying to survive out here on her own, trying to deal with all this.
Especially when, you know, there's a weird man with a harmonica on our land as well.
Yeah. And the intricacies of the story is so deep because, you know, like, I'm sure I've seen a few things with Henry Fonda in, but I never really caught how good of an actor he was until I saw him in this playing the villain, you know. And he's talking to this kind of rich landowner, train owner, whatever.
Yeah, they call him the train baron.
The train baron, played called Morton, and he's suffering from some kind of debilitating illness, which is, you know,
affecting his bones,
so he's having to use crutches to move around. And he wants to control the railroad.
Morton's pretty much the film's main villain.
Yeah,
but he's also very sympathetic because of that, you know, debilitating disease and the fact that he is, you know, restricted to being in this train.
He disagreed with Frank killing and massacring the whole family.
He just wanted Frank to scare them off the land.
Yeah, but for Henry Fonda's work, but they look pretty scared to me.
Yeah.
You know, you're like, oh man, that's harsh. And it reflects to how I feel about Charles Bronson's character. Like, I know Charles Bronson is a good actor. You know, he's been in some classics, but I've never ever felt that he really had range. You know, a lot of his performances are kind of the same. It's Charles Bronson kind of staring at you with a gun, you know? You're dead. You're basically dead. Dirty Dozen, Magnificent Seven, this, Death Wish. There's not really much range. Where in contrast to Frank, Henry Fonda, we could probably get 10 of his roles where he's a cool, helpful kind of guy, and then you've got this where he's a fucking bastard.
He really is. And I love how just reserved he is in just the way that he talks, the way that he carries himself, the way that he moves.
Yeah.
He looks and acts dangerous.
Yeah.
He is, honestly, I think it's literally a masterclass on how to play a villain. And considering he had a career playing good guys, it's like, how did he do that so well?
Yeah, well, it's incredible. That's it. I mean, I kind of feel Lee Van Cleef is still tipping as a big villain. But then again, Lee Van Cleef is a bit like Charles Bronson. He only plays kind of, you know, villainy characters.
It's Henry Fonda. I'm thinking of like Robin Williams in 1 Hour Photo, you know, where you're just like such a lovable guy. And then, Jesus Christ. How do they do that?
And it comes out that Cheyenne is the leader of a gang of outlaws as well, who all wear dusters, long duster coats. And so the three guys that were killed at the train station were part of his gang. The bunch of guys that killed the McBains were part of his gang. So Cheyenne is being kind of forced out of the deal that Frank is making with Morton, because Frank doesn't want to be an outlaw really anymore. He kind of wants to be a businessman.
Yeah.
But he can't, because his business always ends on the end of a gun. And he's usually the one holding it compared to the person. And so Harmonica then kind of, you know, because he's looking for Frank. He's wanting to get revenge on Frank.
We don't know why. And we see flashbacks every now and then, but they're kind of blurred. So we don't really know. But the film's letting us know there's something, and it will wait until the right moment to tell us.
Yeah, and we don't even really know his real name. Every time he interacts with Frank, and Frank's like, who are you and what are you doing here? Harmonica just keeps telling him names, but they're names of dead men.
Yeah.
You know,
ones that Frank has killed.
Yeah, ones that Frank has killed. And so Frank's like, I'm going to find out who you are. But Harmonica realizes that Jill's onto something, you know, and so he starts to look into the background. And it's when Jill kind of, I think it's before the auction, that she finds out that McBain had the delivery of all this wood and all these nails and all this stuff. Like, he was going to build a small town somewhere.
Because all she found when she was looking for the wealth was all these little miniature models.
Yeah.
With the station and stuff. And she just thought, how quaint, but cheap, really.
Yeah.
And so, once all that stuff was there, she realized that's where the wealth was going to come from. So they were going to build a small town out here because there was no fresh water for, 50 miles in any direction. Yeah. But she is, though, captured, essentially, by Frank.
And
Well, I mean, she's essentially raped by him. And then he teased about killing her afterwards.
Yeah.
But then he has the bright idea to then take her to the auction to sell it. And he fills that entire room with his own goons.
Yeah.
So that anybody tried to bid high, they would get shut down.
Well, come on, my friends. $200. The livestock alone is worth twice that much.
And they're in the auction room, And people start to bid, and somebody leans over and whispers something nasty in their mouth. And then another guy is just kind of lazily on the chair, just raising his hand at the tiniest little price. And this is where Cheyenne and Harmonica have kind of come to terms that they know Frank is being a bad guy, and he's using Cheyenne's gang and trying to blame Cheyenne for all the killings so that he goes to jail. So he's got a wanted poster of his face, $5,000. And Harmonica goes, 5,000, and everyone's looks shocked. And he walks down and he's like, as soon as I take Cheyenne in, I'll get 5,000 and then I'll be able to buy the land. And you're like, whoa.
Brilliant. I just want to bring a bit of trivia here for you, though, is that Claudia Cardinale's first day of filming was the nude scene, essentially, with Fonda.
Right, yeah.
And so I was like, that's a wonderful first day of the shoot, isn't it?
I bet you he was really nice, though.
Right. Yeah, but Henry Fonda's wife flew out for the filming of this scene.
I bet you he was really, really nice.
And she was like, I'm sitting here while you film this sequence. So, Henry Fonda was being watched. No naughtiness.
Also like to feel a man's hands all over you. You like it?
But they have that little sequence, don't they? Frank and Harmonica in the kind of bar, and he just keeps repeating these dead man's names, and you can tell that Frank is kind of getting a little bit annoyed by this. But he's also a little bit nervous to draw his gun because this guy knows him and he's ready for him. So this guy could kill him.
Yeah.
And because Frank's upset Morton. You know, he's pushed him around. He's bullied him. We're cutting back to Morton, and Morton's just paying Frank's guys $500. Like, look, you know, I'm just saying that if you help me take out Frank, there'll be more money for you. And so they all decide, oh, yeah, okay, we're going to go kill Frank. And you get that awesome sequence in the town. I mean, Cheyenne has been led off by the cops at this point, and he's like, whoa, I'm going to the town jail. And they're like, no, we're putting you on the train, and we're just going to send you to this place because they've got a bigger jail and they can hold you for longer. And so Cheyenne's a bit like, hang on a minute, what? No, whoa.
Yeah.
And two of his gang members decide to follow him onto the train. The rest of the gang, they're dotted around the town. And Harmonica is just watching Frank. He tells him, like, you know, if I was Morton, I'd have you killed.
Right. And he's with Jill, who's having a bubble bath, which soon turns into a blood bath. As the hitmen, I guess, start trying to take out Frank, but Frank becomes aware of them.
Yeah.
And on top of that, Harmonica becomes his guardian angel.
He does, yeah.
And tells them, like, oh, like, yeah, it points out the clock. Obviously, there's lots of images of unfinished clocks in the film, which, of course, is a play on the film's title as well, Once Upon a Time.
Yeah.
And he keeps helping Frank, pointing out where all these other shooters are. And Frank manages to get away. And you're like, Harmonica wants revenge on him, but I guess it's personal. He wants to do it himself. That's immediately what comes across.
Yeah. I mean, Jill's even annoyed. She's like, why'd you let him live? Right. Why'd you let him go? And Harmonica doesn't need to explain to him, but you do get the feeling from the movie that he wants to do it himself.
Yeah.
He's gonna wait. And so Frank heads all the way back to Morton. And I said to the Gary before we turned the camera on, I got a little bit confused by this bit because we'd seen Cheyenne go off and we'd seen the two guys get on the train and then the big shootout and then Frank's gone to Morton. But when we get back to Morton's train, there's a load of gang members that have been killed there. You know, we don't know by who, we don't know what happened. We just know that people have just been blasted. And he finds Morton outside, kind of wounded.
Yeah, dying. Yeah.
Yeah. And he doesn't even kill him.
No, he realizes he's already done for and just lets him suffer, I guess.
Yeah.
And it's kind of sad. Like, even though Morton is the one who set everything in motion, you know, by hiring Frank to do the scaring, which became the killing, which obviously didn't go the way he planned it to be. But it's the fact that he was the one who wanted to get the rail all the way over to the west so he could see the Pacific.
Yeah.
And there was that wonderful moment where he's staring at his painting and you think you can hear the ocean, but I think it's actually just the train making those noises.
Yeah.
And the fact that he's just there, like, over a muddy puddle, and that's as close as he's going to get to the Pacific.
Oh, man, I just remember we missed the bit where...
We missed the whole train sequence.
With the train sequence. Yeah. Oh, man, that's such a great sequence.
Because Harmonica goes after Frank, follows Frank, gets onto the train, gets the pistol in the face and gets captured. He gets slapped around a bit, and that's where he repeats all of the dead names, which upsets and annoys Frank because Frank's like, who are you for real? Why are you hounding me?
Yeah.
But then when we think about Harmonica's done for, we realize that Cheyenne is hiding underneath the train. And he does this whole thing where he ends up sneaking on top of the train as the other store owner gets shot and killed. And he taps on the glass to confuse the other guy.
Yeah.
And then he holds the boot down off the train. And the other guy's like, oh, gonna get him. And the gunshot goes off through the boot. It's just all these
That's little great
moments.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's good.
But like I said, everything's coming to a head and Harmonica gets back to Sweetwater and sees all the stuff there. And he breaks down the entire kind of plot to Cheyenne and for the audience as well. While he's trying to set up the stakes, you know, he explains to Cheyenne, like, look, McBain knew that the train would have to come through here. There's no water for miles other than those wells. And so that's what they're going to need to keep the train track going. If they can do that, they can build a town here. They can build a station. Before you know it, there's going to just be people here. The train's going to come through. There's going to be money. And it's all going to be on this land, which is literally owned by Jill at the moment. And Cheyenne, I love that bit where Cheyenne just turns to his men and he's just like, well, what are you all waiting for? Get it together. Here's all this stuff. And the guys are like, oh, what?
How do we do that?
And he just, he forces them all to make the, to build the town. When we come back to the town, like, you got all those guys there, they're building the track, they're getting everything ready. Harmonica is just kind of sat there, just chilling, just doing his thing. And here comes Frank. My God, this was the sequence that made me go, you know what, Ian, you were wrong. You didn't know what you were talking about 10 years ago. this moment between Charles Bronson and Henry Fonda, it's so tight.
It's electric.
Oh, the way he kind of climbs down and reaches for his gun and Frank reaches for his, but Bronson kind of turns his gun so he's holding the barrel and just slips it in, and they just kind of signal they're going to go over to place because they're finally going to have the confrontation. And unlike The Good, the Bad and the Ugly, where there's this big music build up and there's, you've been waiting throughout the whole movie for those these three guys to get together, in this, there's not really much of a build up. The workers are still working. Jill's in her house kind of getting stuff together. Cheyenne's in the house as well, kind of having a shave and saying to her, like, you should take some water out to the workers. They're doing all this work. A beautiful woman, and which she is.
Oh, yeah.
She is absolutely like the diamond in the whole of the rough of this desert. If they slap your ass, don't worry about it. Just go with it, because it's just...
They've earned it.
That's what he says. You know? Which I'm like, well, okay, he's got a good point.
It was a sign of the times.
The old West. But... yeah, we're watching Frank and Harmonica.
You say there's no music. I think the music here is spellbinding. Like, because this is where Frank's theme and Harmonica's theme is overlapping and echoing and building, and the way that it's cut to the music as well, and the cinematography, shot composition of them, the extreme slow close up onto his face, the way that the camera's just panning around him as they're circling each other. It's absolutely cinematic brilliance.
Yeah. And then they cut to the flashback, which I totally forgot, you know, but just going back to this flashback of, you see a kind of more worn Frank, more dirtier Frank, you know, and he pulls out this harmonica and he walks to this small boy and he shoves the harmonica in his mouth and he's like, you take care of your brother.
Keep your loving brother.
And we kind of pull back of this boy with this harmonica in his mouth, with this man's feet on his shoulders, and you realize that this boy is trying to hold up his brother who's got a rope around his neck, and Frank and his three guys are just kind of watching, and you're like, oh my God, this is what set this all off.
Yeah.
You know, how long has Harmonica been training and getting himself ready to find, you know, how far has he gone? What has he done? Who has he seen? Who has he killed? Just to find Frank's location. And the boy falls into the dust, and you kind of hear the ding ding of the bell because the rope's pulled and the harmonica music is still kind of playing, and it cuts back and it kind of dawns on Frank who this is. And then they draw.
And it's over in a matter of seconds. As Frank spins around, we see the bullet wound. He tries to holster his gun and drops it, falls down. And Harmonica just puts the harmonica in Frank's mouth.
Yeah.
And we see the realization in his eyes as he goes down. And again, the music just accompanies the actual harmonica sound as he hits the dirt. It's awesome.
It's awesome.
It is.
Freaking awesome.
Yeah.
And then, you know, Jill kind of is still in the house with Cheyenne. And Cheyenne kind of... He's the voice of wisdom in a few sequences.
Absolutely, yeah.
You know, where he kind of explains to her, like, look, I can't stay. I gotta go. And she's kind of happy with that. And he says to her, and he can't stay either. Where he doesn't know which one of them survived. He's pretty sure it's Harmonica, but he's not entirely sure. And he's just like, he's not gonna stay with you. He doesn't love you. You just gotta get that idea in your head. And Harmonica comes in and literally says, like, I can't stay. And Jill's shocked, like...
Maybe you'll come visit someday?
Yeah.
Someday. And off he goes. God damn.
Him and Cheyenne, they leave together. Cheyenne, you know, gets his stuff together and gives her a little slap on the ass as he walks out. It's just so cool. And then they get on the horse and they're kind of tolling off. But Cheyenne falls off, lands on the floor, and he reveals he's got a bullet wound. And he's just like, look, don't look at me while I die. And I'm like, oh my God, Jason Robards.
Yeah.
So cool, man. I mean, you know Eli Wallach, but man, there's that sequence where he's just slow breathing and Harmonica kind of turns away. And then when he turns back, he's slumped over.
Yeah.
And I think he puts him on the horse.
He does, on the other horse, and takes him with him.
Takes him with him.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
And that's when the film title drops.
Yeah.
It doesn't drop normally. It kind of swirls around.
Yeah. I was sat there like, Did this come up at the beginning of the film? I can't remember. No,
we had 10 minutes of credits, but no film title.
No film title. Yeah,
peculiar.
The weird thing is, with the end of the film, like, normally I'd kind of be afraid this is a woman on her own, out in the desert, with all these workers, with all these men. We've seen all this horrible shit that can happen. So, like, is this really a good ending? But
the fact that the train turns up, it feels like civilization's got here.
Yeah.
And the bad has been, you know, removed.
And she feels stronger. Yeah. She was already strong, but she feels stronger to be able to turn to each of these guys and be like, here's your drink, drink your water, do your work. We can work together. We can get this done. Or I'll kill you, because, you know, this is what we do.
Right. Well, Liam, what were your favourite scenes?
Oh, man, like, how? How do you even start? Where do you start? What do you pick? Like, this, normally I'd complain. A three-hour movie is just kind of too much. It can build up too much. But I knew how long this movie was, so I took it in little drabs. I didn't have 3 hours. I barely had two, so I had to, like, get it. But moments are the beginning sequence, that 10-minute sequence. It's beautifully made. It's beautifully shot. The way the sun is, the desert. I mean, I know they're not in Texas or Mexico. They're in Spain.
They filmed a couple of things in America, actually. Right, just to get the authenticity, I suppose.
Yeah.
But yeah, the rest of it was shot in Spain, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But it looks sandy. It looks hot. You've got these three guys just waiting, you know, and then Charles Bronson appears. And you just know from the way that Sergio Leone has situated the guys into position and got them all set up in this one camera shot, somebody's going to get fucking shot and blam, blam, blam. The music that plays when Jill's waiting at the station, like you said, after we've just seen the McBain family killed, and then, you know, by the same time when she gets the farm, it's so beautiful. You feel the loss before she's even felt the loss. It's Ennio Morricone. Oh, you bastard. You bastard. You know, you can just hit certain frequencies with your music that just make you go, oh, Christ, I know what's going on. And the character doesn't know what's going on. Oh, it's amazing. I mean, there are so many great shots I could go on for hours, and I don't want to, but I'll make it easy for myself. After that, it's the shot with Frank and Harmonica walking to the back of the house.
Yeah.
Preparation for their death duel. And then on top of that, the flashback to show you what Harmonica has been through to bring him towards Frank's door. Oh, yeah. And Cheyenne, he's just fucking awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, favorite scenes in this film is really hard because from start to finish, it's a near masterpiece. So I guess I'm just going with kind of personal preference.
Yeah, yeah.
But of course, we've mentioned it multiple times. That first 10 minutes is exquisitely
yeah.
good.
Yeah.
So that entire sequence, that whole scene is magnificent. Love it. I love Cheyenne's intro. You know, the sound effects, the wacky noises as he ends up backing into this bar. It was great. And then all of his introduction scene as well. Brilliant. Absolutely well done.
Yeah.
I also love Harmonica's introduction as well in that sequence when Cheyenne comes in. The way that he throws the light across the ceiling.
Yeah.
And the way that the light just keeps, you know, shining on Harmonica's face and kind of blanking out his eyes. It's like, it's just perfect every time. Like, every shot. Every shot is almost like a painting.
Yeah.
It's so good. The reveal of Flagstone when the camera pans all the way up from behind the train or behind the station, and we just see this wonderful set, all these extras costumes as well. It's like, this is really, really well done.
Yes.
Also, something else I want to bring up is, I mean, we've mentioned how good everything else is, but also the script and the dialogue is fantastic, and there's so many great one-liners, like when you've killed four, it's easy to make it five.
Yes.
It's like, damn, like, yeah. The sequence where he's talking about the horses earlier on as well.
Looks like we're shy of one horse.
You brought two too many.
Again, when Cheyenne is dying and he's just like, pray, you know, when you find someone who's going to take you out, that they know where to shoot.
Yeah.
He's just like that. Now, interestingly as well, like, when Harmonica turns around from that moment, there's literally a bullet hole square in his back. I'm like,
really?
Was that there at the beginning of the film? Did he shoot somebody? Did he take it from somebody who died? Or was at one point Harmonica shot in the back and died? And he's a spectre this whole time. And then that made me think, well, Frank, we've seen him kill kids. Why did he let Harmonica go when he was a kid? Who knew who he was, saw his face. Like, did his MO change from then to now?
Possibly.
Did he kill that boy with the harmonica at the beginning? And he's now that he's done another kid killing, did the specter of this thing, like, come after him? Mm. I don't know. There's some, and of course, with the bullet wound that he took at the beginning as well, and the fact that he seems to heal pretty quickly, there's a, I wouldn't say supernatural. Like, it's like, it's just going off way beyond what the film is.
Maybe.
I'm reading too much into it, I think.
Well, no, because at the same time, like I said, you know, we know for a fact, Leone, you know, sat with two of his mates and just watched a shit ton of westerns, and you know, and he took notes from all of it. So you could be right, you know, from certain aspect.
They harmonica, talk about harmonica and death quite a lot as well.
Harmonica could be, you know, a version of the ghost coming back to seek revenge on Frank, you know, and that just plays into the fantasy of the idea. We don't know much about Harmonica's history, and we don't even know where he goes from this. It's literally, this is his moment to come in and make a difference and take Frank down, you know. Mm. So it's like, where did Sergio Leone really come up with the idea of Frank, or is he just taking little bits from different films to say, I've made this Frankenstein type character who just goes off into the sunset like we always thought they would.
Right. Yeah. Well, Ian, do you recommend Once Upon a Time in the West?
I hell of a do. You know, if you've even considered playing Red Dead Redemption or Red Dead Redemption 2, you really need to do yourself justice and the game justice by going back and watching classic westerns like this. I know a lot of people will be like, well, I think Sergio Leone is a hack and he stole ideas from this, that, and everything. Well, that's just the nature of the business. That's just cinema. That's just game making. You know, people do it from all over the place. He did, I think, hit his peak with The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. And I think he knew that as well and was like, look, I'm done. I want to do something else. I want to do Once Upon a Time in America. But they turned around, the company turned around to him and went, no, here's a shit ton of money. Here's Henry Fonda. Let's see what you can do. And for some people, this might be too much. It might be too slow. They might not get it. But as you get older, there'll be a point where you go, I feel like an old man. I want to sit down and watch a Western. You can't go wrong with this one. I will admit, I'll be honest, it's not in my top 5. It certainly is in my top 10. It certainly is one of those movies that, you know, Quentin Tarantino watched and went, I want to make a Western. And he took ideas and threw it together. But like my friend here said, the music is amazing. The shots are amazing. The character development is amazing. The script is amazing. I want to tell you, I want to say off my own breath that there was this one bit that I didn't like and it made the rest of the film shit, like I do with some really bad movies. I don't know what it is. Maybe you can tell me. But for me, if I ever want to watch a Western again, I'll look at Sergio Leone's collection and go, how long have I got?
Oh, hell yeah. I'm giving Once Upon a Time in the West my highest rating of must watch. This is a masterpiece, a classic. It's one of the best Westerns ever made and one of the best damn films ever made. It's nearly flawless in its execution. It's damn near perfect in every department, from cinematography, pacing, editing, music, performances, script writing, and the film is still entertaining now as it's ever been. It's absolutely genius how well crafted this is. Ennio Morricone's score is fantastic. It's layered so well, each prominent character with identifiable themes that sets the mood and the scene, and the way the film is edited to punctuate the score, perfection. The casting was outstanding, with Henry Fonda delivering one of the most chilling and cold villains in cinema, while Jason Robards as Cheyenne remains my favourite character as the outlaw with a heart. It's a slow burn, for sure, but it builds tension and suspense magnificently with one of the best final showdowns put on film. The set design, the costumes, the lighting, sound effects are all also worth mentioning as being equally masterfully done. It's a story of revenge, of greed and lust, with captivating characters made by legends of the film industry. This is a must-watch film. Watch it. Rewatch it. It's frickin' epic. There were three men in her life. One knew her past, one wanted her land, and one wanted revenge. Thanks for watching Off the Shelf Reviews.